The following program is a presentation of CRN Digital Talk Radio and Les Kincaid. And now it's time for Wines du Jour with your host, Chef Les Kincaid.
My guest tonight is Giancarlo Bomparolo. He is an
authentic Italian gentleman that's going to spend some time with us if he can get out of this very busy restaurant and get back here. And we look forward to our celebration and some great food as well. You have to know that we are proposing and offering a beautiful group of Italian wines this evening, first of which is Prosecco, which is the Italian version of champagne and or sparkling wine. And we're going to talk about that a little bit there. I want to thank you very much for your inquiring emails from your own home country, from all around the world, on the East Coast, from Left Coast, from Italy, from Baja California, from New Zealand, just about everywhere. Welcome. Our in-house special invited guest audience is both hungry and thirsty, and they can't wait to get started, but we're pouring some Prosecco as we speak. Our program broadcasts each week, remembering that each time we reflect on what we're all about, and that is, wine is food. A meal is a meal, but with a glass of wine, it's a celebration. From casual gatherings to formal affairs, wine celebrates any event. Remembering also that we'll discover lots of information about taste and flavor as we enjoy good food and pair it with excellent wines this evening, because wine is bottled poetry. If this is your first time listening to Wines du Jour, stay tuned. You need to know that we do not allow snobbery or intimidation in the room during the broadcast, and Wines du Jour and Wines du Jour Food and Wine radio broadcast is distributed in all 50 states, all around the world via radio, CRN Digital Talk Radio Network, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, AHA Radio, and on several worldwide internet systems all around the globe. And we are also available on podcast and free on iTunes. So listen to us also on Wonder Radio or Warp Radio. You're listening to Wines du Jour. I'm your host, Les Kincaid. So don't touch that radio dial. We'll be back with fun, information, and great taste right here on Wines du Jour. And remember, a meal without wine is called breakfast. But first, I want to talk a little bit about Italian food and or Italian wine, since we're at a very authentic Italian restaurant. And I want to say my dramatic statement to start with is that there's no such thing as Italian food. What? First of all, let me explain to why I said that, and you'll agree with me when I'm finished, I'm almost sure. First of all, Italian food does not give you the individuality that you receive if you ever go to Italy. You know that every region in Italy has its own way of doing things. Yes, lasagna looks the same at every one of the places, but it doesn't taste the same because they feature different sauces, etc., on their lasagna in different parts of Italy. So what I'm saying is that you're going to find the same recipes, or at least the title of the recipe, in most all the different regions, but the taste is going to be different, and that's why I'd like to say no Italian food, but Italian regional cuisine instead. That's what I'm trying to get at. So, also in wines, every region has its own group of varietals. And by that I mean, well, I don't know how many areas there are, regions, if you will, in Italy. I think there's like 62, but I'm not sure of that number. But each one of those have their own amount of varietals that they use to make wine with in that area. And the Italians have a saying that I agree with 100%, and that is, if it grows together, it goes together. And it makes so much good sense. So what we have to do is think about what type of food it goes along with, what type of wine, and where it comes from. We should do that in America a little bit more. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about all this sort of thing with Italian regional cuisine. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back coast to coast and around the world on the internet right here on Wines du Jour. The Wine Science du Jour. We're having a great time here at Siena Trattoria, right here in Las Vegas. If you haven't been there before, you need to know. You just get on Sahara Boulevard, go west, and you can't miss it. It's a beautiful freestanding building right out on the street, and it holds, I don't know, maybe 300 people here. In our room this evening that we have, we've got about 40 hungry, thirsty people, and they're in the process of tasting for the first time Prosecco. A lot of people have never tasted Prosecco, but I have to tell you that Prosecco is one of the probably the hottest items in the world today when it comes to alcoholic beverages, because it's just become a very popular product for just an awful lot of people. It used to be champagne, then it went to sparkling wine, and now they've discovered Prosecco, which is the Italian answer to Prosecco. And I just want to mention something that most people don't know. Let me just tell you about champagne first. You know, in the region of Champagne, France, which is the only place that they produce champagne, anywhere else that it's produced, it cannot be called champagne, just so you know. And the rules in that area are they're allowed to use any one or any combination of three varietals. That would be Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Meunier. Any one of those three, but nothing else. Okay. Everywhere else in the world, when they make sparkling wine, you can use any varietal you want. There's no law in any country, so you can just easily pick out whatever you want. As an example, some places in California love Zinfandel, so they'll make their sparkling wine with Zinfandel. So you get a nice dark color instead of a champagne, what we think of as a champagne color. So what happens then is that when you go over to Italy, they have their own way of doing things, and they make what they call Prosecco. They don't use any varietals other than one that you probably have not ever heard of, and I'm going to tell you the name of it. It's very easy. It's called Glera, G-L-E-R-A. That's the name of the varietal, and that's what they make Prosecco out of. Who knew? Okay? Just thought you'd like to know that. I want to get back to the varietals in Italy as well, and that is, well, in America, as an example, we have probably around 52, I'm just going to use that number because I don't know the exact one, but pretty close to 52 different varietals. That would be, you know, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Cabernet Sauvignon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, 52. You go to Italy, every region has its own varietal, and they have over 200 different varietals. So you can go all around Italy and taste wine that you've never, ever, ever had before. And if you think you're a good connoisseur of fine wines and you happen to go to Italy for the first time, you're not going to taste anything you're familiar with. It's because they have their own way of doing it. And, hey, you know what? It's beautiful. And that goes back to what I mentioned earlier about if it grows together, it goes together. That stands true for the varietals as well as the vegetables and the meat and so on in all the different areas in Italy. So we're back to Italian regional cuisine. I want to mention something about our very first product tonight, which is Prosecco. I told you a little bit about the Glera grape, but I want to tell you a little bit about where that sort of thing is developed. Well, they have an area called, it's called Prosecco area, which you end up with having, well, I don't know, I guess just about anything that you want in any area, but it's going to taste different than in others. However, when we get to our third wine today, we're talking about Prosecco now. Our next wine is going to be Pinot Grigio. We'll talk a lot about that because that's turned out to be a very, very popular white wine that people are drinking today as opposed to Chardonnay. And then last but not least, a Chianti. And I just want to shock a lot of people probably by saying Chianti is not a varietal. Chianti is a region in Ascoli. It's in Tuscany. And Tuscany sits, in case you're, you know, interested in where in Italy it's located, if you know where Florence is, just above Florence is the Tuscany region. And then in the Tuscany region is a town called Chianti. In that town, they started making a product that they call Chianti. It's made generally with Sangiovese grapes. That's a beautiful red grape of Italy, which I happen to think an awful lot of. But the Chianti has now in that town, I believe it's pretty close to 60 different wineries. That's kind of incredible. Started out with two or three, and then it's all the way up to 60 now. So when you taste the Chianti from just about anywhere, you have to know that it's going to taste a little bit different than the next-door neighbor that makes theirs, because Sangiovese, being the major varietal in that combination, the recipe might include a little bit of something else. So that'll make the taste just a little bit different. And then you can try a lot of different Proseccos until you find one you like, and that's the way it goes. I always say, drink what you like and find what you like. Remember it. Go to your local retail store, and if they don't happen to have the product that you like, they can get it. All you have to do is tell them, bring it in, and I'll buy some. And they'll do that for you. That's what the retail business is all about. Now, I wanted to mention a couple things about the northern part of Italy, where Prosecco is made, where the Pinot Grigio is made, and also where Chianti is made. And that would be, I mentioned Florence, and above Florence is Tuscany. Then if you go east of that, all the way over to the ocean, there's a town that most everybody knows about called Venice. The Venice area is kind of unique. First of all, there are no roads in Venice. You walk or you take a boat to go anywhere you want to go. And mostly, folks, you walk. And I have to tell you, I've been there, and everywhere you walk is uphill. I don't care where you're going, it's uphill every time. It's unbelievable, but it's true. If you go back to Florence and go directly south of Florence, there is the what people think of as the capital of Italy. Of course, it isn't, but it's a big town called Rome, or Roma, they like to call it. Then back over to Venice, just northwest of Venice, there's a mountain range, and that mountain range happens to be about 80% vineyard, and that area is called Friuli. So if you hear the term Friuli, you know right away it's in the northeast part of Italy. Venice is just not too far away from that. And then you go straight west of there. We're all talking now, of course, about northern Italy. Go west, you go to Florence, or go to Rome, or go to Tuscany, or go to Chianti. Those are all the major areas in the northern part of Italy. And the reason I'm talking about that is that in the northern part of Italy, something that most people aren't aware of, is that they have cattle there, which means that they milk the cows, which is where they make all the cheeses. So all the cheese that you know about, your favorite Parmesan or Romano or whatever it might be, is made in northern Italy always. However, if you go to southern Italy, the whole climate, the appearance of everything is far different than northern Italy. It's more desert-like. It's more like Las Vegas, if you want to know the truth. The weather is very warm. They don't have cattle there. They do have some pigs. That's about it as far as that, or some goats and sheep. But that's about it. They don't have beef in the south. It's in the north. But what they do have is what everybody in the world loves, and that's tomatoes. They grow more tomatoes in southern Italy probably than anywhere that I can possibly imagine. And the tomatoes there are called, the species is called San Marzano. That's Sanmarzano. And I want you to, if you haven't already done it, write that name down. Go to your local store. And that's the type of tomato that I want you to use when you're making pizza sauce, pasta sauce, or any red sauce for Italian cuisine. And it'll taste more like it did when you were in Italy, or if you'd never been there, more like it would be if you were there. Because San Marzano is an outstanding tomato, not available in America, only through the Italian import. And that's because San Marzano is grown in the southern part of Italy only. Kind of interesting, but very important to know if you like to cook. San Marzano is a tomato that you want to use for Italian cuisine for sure. The Siena Trattoria, where we're sitting this evening, Well, Sienna has been in Las Vegas for over 30 years altogether. Not in this location. They were in the eastern part of town for quite a while. And when Giancarlo Buonaparola comes in to visit with us this evening, you'll find out a little bit more as in terms of details. But I just wanted you to know that this is an excellent Italian, authentic Italian cuisine here at this restaurant. They have a full menu. That means that they have, you know, the appetizer, soup, salad, dessert, etc. They specialize, of course, in Italian cuisine. And they are all authentic Italian dishes. Now, the people in the kitchen speak very little English. I mean, they are from Italy, folk. They are cooking just like they did before they left Italy. And that's what makes it good for you and I as a customer. That's a good thing. And you'll see what I mean when you have an opportunity to hear Giancarlo when he comes in here. Fresh is probably the middle name. They should call it Sienna Fresh Trattoria, because everything here is made from scratch. All the pasta and so on. And I just want to mention one of the pasta dishes that they have that I happen to think is just absolutely outstanding is something that they call, well, you know, when it comes to pasta, there's a lot of shapes. You know, we all know about spaghetti and spaghettini and ravioli, all that sort of different shapes. But you need to know there's about 52 different shapes that are made, but they're all made from the very same recipe. So please don't tell me that you like one better than the other, you know, because it tastes different. Well, it's shaped different, but it doesn't taste any different. Now, that the difference, of course, might be the sauce that you put with it, obviously. So that's pretty simple. But here's the key. Now, if you're going to make your own pasta, and I recommend you do, and if you're not sure how to do it and you want some help, send me an email. I'll be happy to send you the detailed information on how to make your own pasta. Not a problem. And my email address is les@leskincaid.com. Pretty easy to find. Go to the website. It's the same one, leskincaid.com. All kinds of good information on there. In fact, we just redid our entire website just a few weeks ago, and we're getting between 800 and 1,000 unique visitors per day to the website. Very big service. That's a good thing. So what I'm talking about is to make your own pasta, you need to have a particular flour. That's F-L-O-U-R, not F-L-O-W-E-R. A particular flour called semolina. And if you don't know about semolina, go to your local market and ask somebody in the area there. They can probably tell you a little bit about it. But what I am saying, do not, please understand, do not use all-purpose flour to make pasta. It's junk. It's sticky, it's gooey, and when I was growing up, all the women that made their own pasta had to rinse it. Well, they rinsed it because they were using all-purpose flour. Folks, don't use it, don't rinse it, no problem. Semolina is the answer. Now, every bit of pasta made in Italy is made from semolina. Now, you know, we all know about olive oil. Most people love Italian olive oil, extra virgin, virgin, etc. But you have to know that the demand for olive oil, just like the demand for semolina pasta, is so high they can't possibly grow enough of it in Italy. So here's a little inside information. In the United States, in the central northern part of the United States, you know, the Dakotas and Nebraska and so on and so forth, they grow semolina and ship it to Italy. They convert it into pasta and export it to the United States. How about that? So even though it came from Italy, it may have been grown, the semolina I'm talking about, may have been grown in the United States. That's okay. It's not bad. It's semolina. That's where the taste and flavor is, and that's what it's all about. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll talk just a little bit more about this sort of thing and have a little bit of fun and talk more about Prosecco. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back from about just a few minutes. Don't go anywhere. Be right back. Welcome back to Wine. Wines du jour. We're having a good time here at Siena Trattoria. Before we went to a break, I was mentioning a little bit about semolina and all-purpose flour. Please don't forget that. It's very important if you want a successful pasta. And any shape you want to make. You know, if you have a little press that you can flatten out the pasta, you can roll it up and cut it into little pieces. You can make them wide or you can make them narrow, whatever you like, and then cook the pasta. Just remember that fresh pasta takes generally about 3 to 4 minutes in boiling water, salted boiling water. And the reason that we put salt in the water is twofold. Number one, we want it to taste like seawater. So when we put our pasta in it, we want it to taste like it was comes from the sea, so to speak. The other one is that salt in the water brings the water to a boil at a higher temperature. And in the food industry, you probably don't know this necessarily, but the quicker we can cook something, the better off we are. You know, when you put your steaks on the grill, you put it on the hottest part of the grill to really sear that outside. There's a reason for that. Well, it's the same thing, only it's not that much heat. But the idea is to cook quick, not to be in a hurry, and don't turn everything on high on your stove. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that we're trying to cook things as quick as we can, and pasta cook as fast as we can when it's fresh. When it's not fresh, it's going to take probably anywhere from 7 to 12 minutes, depending on the pasta and so on. So read the directions on the package when you buy it, when it's already made. You know, they always tell you like 6 to 8 minutes as an example. Well, the 6 minutes, boy, I don't know too many Italians that like it that what we call al dente. That's just too crunchy for pasta for me. So 8 minutes, I do it about 9. You know, not that it's overcooked, but it's just not undercooked, if you know what I'm saying. And that's what makes the whole dish taste better, I think, because it's important to have a good sauce, but at the same time, you want the pasta to be palatable, so to speak. So I wanted to mention a little bit more about Prosecco. Number one, some people asked during the break, what's the alcohol percentage? Because I talk about alcohol in wine products almost every week, and the answer is 11%. That's not bad at all. We think anything of 14.5 or lower is very good. Anything 14.5% and higher, we actually don't, we can't pair food with it so well. The higher the alcohol, the tougher it is to pair with food. And wine is food. So we're trying to make sure that the wine doesn't have too much alcohol. And also, the higher the alcohol, you can taste the alcohol in the wine. And to me, that kind of ruins the beautiful taste of the wine itself. And, of course, you always have, I think, most of the time anyway, some good food to pair it with. So you're going to taste it. Speaking of pairing, let's talk a little bit about what the chef has done here with this Prosecco. He outdid himself, or at least I think so. He made a beautiful little bruschetta. And the bruschetta had the chopped tomatoes and garlic and olive oil and so on. He did a little bit of crab cake, and he deep-fried the crab cake, in case you hadn't noticed. It's beautiful, with a little aioli sauce. And that, along with this Prosecco, is perfect because Prosecco goes really well with fish and seafood, in case you didn't know it. If you have a fillet of red snapper at home that you're going to cook, you could have a little Prosecco served with it, and it would work out very, very nice instead of having a white wine, per se, or non-bubbly, if you will. And also, what was I going to say about that? The semolina. When you make the fresh pasta, try not to make large quantities of it. Yes, you can freeze it, and it's okay. I don't prefer that because I think it tastes a little different once it's been frozen and then thawed and then cooked. It doesn't taste exactly the same. And if that's okay with you, fine, because it's okay. You know, whatever you like is what you should do. That's the way I feel about that. Also, this Prosecco is really light and refreshing. It's crispy. It has a nice little bubbly feeling, if you will, on your tongue and in your mouth. It has a little bit of citrus notes to it, a little bit of lemon, which I vodka is very, very nice. Some green apple, which is about perfect for Prosecco. Some grapefruit, a little bit of minerality, as I like to call it. And most of all, similar to one of my favorite champagnes, it's on the toasty side. I like the little toastiness in this Prosecco. So I think it's a pretty good product. And for about $17 a bottle, it's not going to break the bank. So make sure that you have it chilled well. They prefer to have it around 40 to 50 degrees instead of down around 32 like you do for champagne. So a little bit on the warmer side by comparison. But if you just take it out of your refrigerator and let it sit, by the time you get the top off and pour it, it'll be the perfect temperature. Got to go to a break. We'll be back coast to coast and around the world on the internet right here on Wines du Jour. Welcome back to Wines du Jour. We're having a good time here at the beautiful Siena Italian Trattoria here in Las Vegas with authentic Italian cuisine. And boy, I have to tell you, everything we've had so far has been dynamite, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very good. Well, let's talk a little bit about number two wine, which is actually the Masso Canelli Pinot Grigio. Before we do that, I want to mention, I don't know if I did or not, frankly, I don't remember if I told you that the Prosecco was 11% alcohol. I did tell you that. I remember now. Okay, that's good. Now, the alcohol content in this Pinot Grigio that we're consuming currently is 12%. So it's almost the same, and it retails for about $19.99. So you know that that's a pretty good price. Pinot Grigio, as I mentioned a little bit earlier in the program, that is a very, very popular white wine that people all around the country are consuming nowadays, as opposed to the old-fashioned and forever Chardonnay. And just so that you know, Chardonnay does not pair with food half as well as Pinot Grigio at all. And probably the best pairing of food for white wine would be Sangiovese. That's not it. Sauvignon Blanc. Thank you very much. Sauvignon Blanc, I think, is easier to pair with food than any other. We're talking about white wine than any other white wine. The Pinot Grigio is just popular because it's great by itself. You can find it in almost every restaurant, including, of course, all the Italian restaurants will have it. And it goes well with a lot of dishes, especially light dishes. And speaking of light dishes, the chef has decided he's going to do something very good here, and everybody's enjoying it as we speak here with our audience, and that's seared bay scallops, along with the asparagus, what he calls asparagus Mediterranean, and a little prosciutto and melon. Now, how in the hell bad could that be? I mean, that is good. And then you have a nice little taste of Pinot Grigio, and you're okay. Now, the Trentino area in Italy, and that's just east of Florence, is where the Pinot Grigio grapes are grown. This is really nice. It's crisp. It's got a nice golden pale color. It's not too dark, and it's certainly not too light. It has some citrusy notes to it, which I think are good, along with a little bit of floral and a nice aroma to it. I think the nose on this is very, very tasty, along with a little bit of nectarine. And I think the nectarine is what makes it go so well with this fruit that we're eating right alongside this beautiful. I don't know. You like asparagus? Everybody like asparagus? Okay, let me mention something about asparagus you probably don't know, and I'm not trying to insult anybody. I'm just trying to let you know for your own benefit, if you will. When you go to the store and buy asparagus should be a minimum size of your little finger, no thinner than that. And the reason I'm telling you that is this. Anything smaller in diameter than that real skinny stuff, I call those weeds, folk. It's asparagus for sure, but it's the second or third growing of asparagus, and it ain't as good as the real stuff. Yes, it's authentic asparagus, but it ain't so good. So I say, leave it in the store. If you're going to buy asparagus and it's got that available, go to the freezer section and buy some frozen asparagus. It'll be much, much tastier when you fix it. You know, we think that only fresh is best. Well, frozen is also good. And let me explain to you now how that works real quick, like. Number one, I'll continue with asparagus. When asparagus is first taken out of the field, it takes over and they freeze it. That's about as fresh as you can get it because once it's frozen, it's in suspense. It does not get any older, loses any taste or anything like that. On the other hand, if they take it out of the field and it's fresh, they box it up, they ship it to wherever the heck they're going to ship it to, it comes to your local grocery store, they put it on the shelf, it might be there for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 days before you go shopping and buy some. So technically speaking, which freshest, the frozen or the so-called fresh that you just bought? Frankly, chances are the frozen is fresher than the fresh, if you know what I'm saying. So I just wanted you to know that that's the way it works. And we'll talk about this closer to November when we get to Thanksgiving, because this is what happens with turkeys. So people say, oh, no, I only want a fresh turkey. Well, I've got a story about that, but we'll wait until November to tell it. It's not necessarily the most ideal thing, just so you know. Being a chef, I'm just telling you what I know, okay? So this Masocanelli is the name or the brand, if you will, of the Pinot Grigio, and the year is 2014. What I did not tell you about the Prosecco a little earlier is it is non-vintage. There is no year, not 2014, 2010. It doesn't have a vintage. It's called non-vintage. What that means between you and me, they have some from last year and some from this year, and they blend it together to get the taste that the winemaker is looking for, and it becomes non-vintage instead of a varietal with a vintage, okay? So vintage always means the year that the grapes were grown. If it says non-vintage, that just means there's more than 1 year in the same bottle, and they did it for taste. And it's not uncommon, especially with things like Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay. It's kind of hard-pressed to find a non-vintage Chardonnay nowadays, but it used to be there was a lot of it because they blend a couple, 3 years. But because it became so popular, they didn't have any left over from last year, if you know what I'm saying. So that's the reason for that. We've got to go to a break again. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the Pinot Grigio, and more specifically about what the chef did. He did a beautiful job pairing the food with this. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after these messages. Welcome back to Wines du Jour. We're having a good time here at Siena. And let me tell you, we're about ready to taste wine number three. I want to finish talking about wine number two and the pairing, because I thought the pairing with the asparagus, wasn't that an excellent taste? It's a great combination. And I mentioned earlier, it's $19.99 roughly, depending on what store you go to, but around $19.99 a bottle. The floral notes in that Pinot Grigio, I thought, were just really, really effective, if you will, in making you want to take a taste. You know, not just smelling it, but to taste it. So, okay, that's enough of that. 12% alcohol. 2014 was the vintage year of that Pinot Grigio. And let's go now to wine number three, which is Da Vinci Reserva, the Chianti. Now, I mentioned earlier about Chianti being just north of Florence in an area known as Tuscany. And in that town of Chianti, there are 60-plus wineries. I didn't count them all, but I can tell you I don't think that's too far off. But the important part is they use Sangiovese, which is one of the more popular varietals, especially in the northeastern part of Italy, and that's a good thing. But Sangiovese is a very, very popular varietal, and that's what this particular Chianti is made with. Well, guess what? He finally got a break.
Well, main course coming in. All right.
Giancarlo is here with us tonight. First of all, thank you for taking time out of your schedule. And, man, I have to tell you, you are a busy person to come back here and talk with us for a little while. Tell us a little bit about the Siena Trattoria and where you stand today.
Where we stand today? Siena Trattoria, it was started like an original little small deli in Tropenister about 30 years ago. Uh-huh. You know, from there, now it becomes a big deal. Actually, it becomes one of the well-known restaurants attached with the deli. And it's pretty much well in doing very well. Matter of fact, we have another two coffee shops in downtown, and we have another one going to be ready in less than 6 months.
Hmm. Unbelievable. Well, how long have you been with Siena? You started it, didn't you?
Yeah, not the beginning, but I used to work with the Mike back in the days.
I remember Mike. He was a great man.
Yeah, and then when I came back from Sacramento, so it's been about 10 years now, 9, 10 years, something
well,
like
and
that.
How long have you been in this location?
About 8 years.
8 years. Well, I have to tell you, folks, if you live in Las Vegas or if you come to Las Vegas, make sure that you take time out to have a lunch or a dinner 7 days a week at an authentic Italian trattoria called Siena on West Sahara. Easy to find. Any taxi can take you there without a problem. They know all about it. But if you're driving, it's easy. Just go west on Sahara from the Strip, about 5 or 6 miles, and there you are. It's easy to find. It's a self freestanding building sitting right on the street of Sahara. And the food here is superior. They make everything from scratch, I have to tell you. And there's no fudging in that area either. One of the things that I wanted to talk about, because we're starting with wine number 3, which I mentioned is that the Reserva Chianti. I was telling you a little bit about Chianti wine. And the location north of Florence, the Chianti area or the city of Chianti, but also the food. And the chef has put together some chicken rollatini with stuffed ricotta cheese. Now, I hope you're familiar with ricotta or ricotta, some people call it, ricotta cheese. it is very tasty, and along with some olives and some other cheeses like risotto, some porcini. They put it all together and made a beautiful stuffed rollatine. That is with chicken. I have to tell you, it goes so well with this Chianti. It's unbelievable. And Chianti is, for those of you that ask me all the time, it's 13.5% alcohol. So it's well under the, oh my God, it's too much alcohol. That part of it's good. And it retails for about $25. So that's a reasonable price for a good red wine. And this particular dish goes so well with it. How do you pick some of the things that you put on your menu? Because you change your menu every six months.
6 months,
yeah.
6 months we do seasonal menu, so we try different things. Right now we are going to the porcini season.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And usually it's very well known from the same area of Tuscany.
Right, that's true.
So with the beautiful risotto, you know, this one it will go very well. And we pick, instead of picking red meat, we did a little white like this. It will balance the two to do the mellow. A little bit of cheeses with some olives just to clean the palate, and then it will go perfect to open up for this type of wine.
Well, ricotta cheese is one of my favorite cheeses to cook with. I like it very much. And I hope that if you don't know about it, you can go to your grocery store, the cheese section. It usually comes in a little container as opposed to where you cut it like you would a Parmesan. And ricotta, you can get it what they call 2% or light fat and regular.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend regular.
Yeah.
It has more flavor, more taste. Okay, just don't eat it every day. It's not going to be something that if you eat it, you wear it. You know, that kind of a thing. So good ricotta is very, very good. You agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah. And that's something that's good. Of course, chicken, how bad can chicken be? You know, we have chicken in America just about 6 days out of the seven, almost all the time. So I have to tell you that chicken is a good item, and if you take it and make it something like this, it'll be great. We got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more with Giancano here at Siena Trattoria. Be back in just a few moments. Welcome back to Wine du Jour. We're having a great time here. We're learning things from Giancarlo here about this restaurant and some of the things that he does. He brought out a plate for us to pair with our Chianti today, and I have to tell you, there's about four or five different items on this plate, which normally we don't see to pair, and every one of them goes so well with this Chianti, it's hard to believe. I want to mention two things about the Chianti before we go on and continue our talk with Giancarlo, and that is the alcohol content is 13.5, which is very, very good, and I mentioned earlier, I guess, but $25 is about the cost of a bottle of this Chianti Reserva, made mostly from Sangiovese. But I want to take you back several years. Some of you may or may not remember, but you remember back when you were a youngster and you'd go into the store, you saw that, went to the wine section, they had that bottle of wine with a wicker basket?
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
Yes.
Folks, that was Chianti. And most people don't realize that. That was Chianti. And everybody thought Chianti was the name of the grape that it made.
Yep.
And it wasn't. Straw basket actually is called Fiasco. That's what the Italians call Fiasco.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of weird. And you don't see too much of it. It is still available. You know, there's a couple other wines that we could talk about, like Blue Nun and so on, that people drank in those days. And today we would just not take it. We wouldn't give it to our enemies, not to mention take it home and drink it. And in those days, it was beautiful. It's amazing how our palate has really improved over the years. And that's one of the things that they do here at Siena, is they have a wine list that you could choose some beautiful wines from, some from Italy, some from America.
Yep.
But they all go with food, and that's what it's all about, because wine is food. A meal is a meal, but with a glass of wine, it's a celebration. From casual gatherings to formal affairs, wine celebrates any event, and that's what we're saying here. Come to Siena. It's on West Sahara, easy to find, freestanding building. Seats about, I said, around 300. How many people do you see?
250, 300, about that.
So we're good. And the good thing is they also have happy hour. Tell us a little bit about your happy hour.
Yeah, it's Monday to Saturday, 3 to 7, and then we have a Sunday, it's all day long.
All day long? Okay.
So Sunday, it's pretty much, since we open, you can have a happy hours.
And do you need a reservation for lunch or dinner?
It's recommended, you know, most of the time. Sometimes we are very crowded, sometimes it's a little mellow.
Yeah.
Lately, it's been a lot more busy than usual, so it's recommended a little
bit. That's great. Well, I have to tell you, Siena is one of our favorite places, and if you like Italian cuisine, especially authentic Italian cuisine, at a trattoria. You may not know what a trattoria is. That's what they call them in Italy, trattoria, is that it has really good quality product at reasonable prices. And that's what they have here at Siena Trattoria on West Sahara in Las Vegas. This Chianti, I think it has a nice plummy taste to it by itself. It has a little bit of vanilla, which, as you probably know, if you've been listening to Wines du Jour, is that the vanilla flavor comes strictly from the oak that it was aged in. And we've got to tell you, we're running out of time. That's unbelievable. I want to thank you for listening to Wines du Jour, Food and Wine, here in Las Vegas. You're also featured wines this evening from Italy. We're America's number one syndicated food and wine radio show, and we broadcast each week at this very same time on this very same station that you're listening to. And so if you want to know more about my personal objects, go to leskincade.com. If you want to know more about my subjects, I just said, and go to leskincade.com or go to Facebook or Twitter for the current updates. Thanks again for allowing us to have Siena Trattoria and Giancarlo Bopalaro for the wines. Also, I want to thank you for my radio. Podcast engineer Jeremy Knight for his work. Thanks for choosing and listening to Wines du Jour from the Left Coast, from the East Coast, and from all around the world on the Internet. From Las Vegas, Nevada, I'm Les Kincaid.